The opinions and commentary expressed in the following presentation do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, the Economic Club of Indiana, or the Economic Club's agents or sponsors. Support for the Economic Club of Indiana is provided by the Lumina Foundation, with a goal to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025. Focused on ensuring an accessible, responsive, and accountable higher education system.
Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. Today's presentation is from CEO of Citizens Energy Group, Jeffrey Harrison.
Jeff Harrison is a lifelong Hoosier. Born in Jeffersonville, he holds a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering from the Rose Holman Institute of Technology and an MBA from Indiana University. He spent 13 years at Indianapolis Power and Light Company before joining Citizens in 2005, where he has risen very quickly through the ranks and was named President and CEO of Citizens in 2015. Under Jeff's leadership, Citizens continues to look for innovative and environmentally sound and conscious ways to deliver utility services to its consumers. Jeff is everything there is about Citizens, but he's also about even more than Citizens. As I mentioned in our opening remarks today, he's involved as the board chair for the YMCA here. I am privileged to have him as one of our directors on the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership Board, and he has also signed on for the very important and very challenging work of developing 60 acres of land known as 16 Tech, and he's one of the founding directors of the 16 Tech Community Corporation. I've gotten to know Jeff very well in both of these positions, and it's wonderful to see a person who is so good at what he does, who is so extraordinarily competent and operationally knowledgeable in what his business is and what needs to happen and what needs to get done in the community. Hands-on with his work, hands-on with his team, very committed to smart growth and sustainability for this community. We couldn't have a better and greater speaker with us today than Jeff Harrison. Please join me in welcoming Jeff to the stage.
David, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. You know, you've arrived when you actually get a shorter introduction, like here is the Pope or the President. You've got work to do when it takes that long. Thank you again for inviting me here today to address the Economic Club of Indianapolis. It's truly an honor to be with you as I begin my second year as the President and CEO of Citizens Energy Group. I see on the schedule that I'm following Roger Penske again as the monthly speaker. So suffice it to say that a CEO talking about the value of public utilities won't come close to matching the excitement of IndyCar racing. However, over the past year, as I've spoken to many community groups, I've been reminded of the tremendous responsibility I have for leading an organization that has a profound impact on the daily lives of our citizens and the economic development of our community. As I assume this leadership role, I've been guided by the importance of my youth. And that includes being grounded in the lessons of teamwork on my father's bricklaying crew in Jeffersonville, Indiana, as a laborer. From my days in college at Rose Holman, I've been reminded of the importance of diversity in learning and reaching the best possible outcomes. From my early career at Indianapolis Power and Light, I've been reminded that was Rafael Sanchez. The consummate humorist. I've been reminded of my importance of establishing individual team goals that align with the strategic goals of an organization. This afternoon, I'd like to spend our time together discussing the vital role energy and water play in ensuring quality of life and economic development in our state and in our nation. I will discuss some of the significant utility infrastructure challenges facing our communities and communities across the United States. And I will also discuss how Citizens Energy Group, and how David talked about earlier, is a very unique institution, a very unique construct here in Indianapolis and in the nation, and how we're creating value for our customers and for our communities through innovation. To best frame my remarks, I'd like you to hear directly from some of the employees of Citizens Energy Group who are bringing you life-sustaining energy and water services every day.
Trust.
It's about trust.
It's something earned. Something that can never be taken for granted.
It's words in action.
Generations of Citizens Energy Group employees have never forgotten why we're here.
or the value of your trust.
What makes a public trust?
Our commitment to the people of Central Indiana, people just like you.
We don't have to answer to shareholders. We answer to you.
Our goal is to serve you to the best of our abilities.
Providing ready access to clean, reliable natural gas and water.
When it comes to steam generation and wastewater, we're making strides to protect the environment for years to come.
But what makes Indianapolis different is what Citizens Energy Group as a public trust is doing about it now.
Together, we're investing hundreds of millions of dollars in our water and sewer systems in the next decade.
With your support, we will reduce sewer overflows into rivers and streams. We are working to eliminate thousands of failing septic systems.
We're spending $2 billion on the Dig Indy project.
Digging more than 25 miles of underground tunnels designed to reduce overflows by more than 95%.
We're more efficient, implementing private sector practices for the public good.
In the end, being a public trust is about keeping yours, and that's what we're working to do every day.
Because after all, we're all citizens.
We're all citizens, just like you.
As you can see, Citizens employees have a passion for providing service to our community and for finding innovative solutions to some very significant challenges. So let's talk more about those energy and water challenges and opportunities in a little bit more detail. And first, we'll talk about the energy side. As you may have heard, there's currently and has been going on a natural gas revolution occurring in the United States. Thanks to an innovative production method known as hydraulic fracturing, the United States has become the leading producer of natural gas in the world. In addition, prices have fallen despite unprecedented demand driven largely by electric power generators that are converting from coal-fired power plants to clean-burning natural gas. Here in Indianapolis, Citizens converted our Perry K steam plant to natural gas in 2014. And this year, Indianapolis Power and Light completed conversion of their Harding Street gas station generating facility as well. The natural gas revolution's impact on Indianapolis has been significant for our customers and for the economy. Leveraging lower gas prices with long-term supply contracts, Citizens has reduced the average residential customer's bill by more than 42% over the past 7 years. Thank you. Lower natural gas prices are also helping Central Indiana businesses compete in a global marketplace, especially those energy-intensive businesses such as manufacturing that are located here. The economic impact of the natural gas revolution has been critical to our nation's recovery from the Great Recession as well. According to a recent study by the American Gas Association, the annual economic impact of the natural gas revolution is equivalent to $1,200 of additional disposable income for every household in the United States. And the American Gas Association study indicates that benefits will be long-lasting. The study estimates that natural gas production will create about 3.9 million jobs and add about $533 billion to our gross domestic product over the next 10 years. In addition to these economic benefits, we're also seeing environmental benefits. Using natural gas for electric power generation decreases emissions that cause smog by more than 90%, and emissions linked to global warming by more than 45% compared to burning coal. And again, while natural gas will continue to grow, we do expect coal to play a significant role and meaningful role in energy in the United States. While the natural gas revolution has been great for consumers, the gas industry nationwide faces significant challenges with our aging infrastructure. As you can see from this graph, much of the 1.6 million miles of gas pipeline in the U.S. are now more than 50 years old. Faced with new federal pipeline standards, natural gas companies across the United States, including many companies here in Indiana, are in the midst of large-scale pipeline replacement programs to ensure both safety and continued reliability. Fortunately, the picture here in Indianapolis could not be more different. Thanks to about $600 million of investment completed over the past 30 years, more than 99% of Citizens' natural gas system is the newer or protected steel pipe that meets these new federal standards. The results of this investment were illustrated vividly by a recent leak detection study combined with Environmental Defense Fund and Google Maps. With a specifically equipped Google Maps car, a leak detection study was conducted in New York, Boston, and Indianapolis. And in New York and Boston, where there are more than 40% of the gas systems are made of that cast iron pipe that are over 50 years old, the study found thousands of natural gas leaks. Here you see a map of Boston that plots the thousands of gas leaks that were found. But here in Indianapolis, the study only found five tiny gas leaks that pose no threat to the public. And since then, those leaks have been repaired. As Citizens has improved its natural gas system, it has also invested in our steam and our chilled water system that heat and cool about 300 buildings and more than 83 million square feet in the downtown Indianapolis area, including this convention center. And unlike other cities with aging thermal energy systems struggling to meet demand, Citizen steam and chilled water systems are delivering highly efficient energy that allows our customers across the growing downtown area to focus on their particular missions rather than wasting and building space and trained staff on energy production. While the energy industry faces significant investments, actually the water and wastewater industry challenges are even more significant across central Indiana and across the nation. In its most recent report card on the nation's water and wastewater infrastructure, the American Water Works Association states that most of the nation's underground water and wastewater infrastructure has already surpassed its useful life of 120 years. The problems presented by this are obviously immense. The Water Works Association study found there are about 240,000 water main breaks each year in the United States, and that wastes about 2 trillion gallons of water, or about 18% of all the water that is treated for drinking. To put that number into perspective, if you flooded New York City with 2 trillion gallons of water, the top of the Empire State Building would be 300 feet beneath the surface. At the same time, there are nearly 800 communities across the United States that are discharging some 850 billion gallons of raw sewage from aging combined storm sewer and sanitary sewer systems into our public waterways. And it's important to note, many of these public waterways are the primary sources of our drinking water. So fixing these problems obviously will be tremendously expensive, and the Water Works Association estimates that $1 trillion of investment will be needed over the next 20 years to update aging water and wastewater systems infrastructure and install new infrastructure to accommodate both population growth and economic development. The water and wastewater systems acquired 5 years ago from the City of Indianapolis face these same problems. Each year, our aging water system experiences more than 500 main breaks, we're wasting more than 4 billion gallons of finished drinking water. At the same time, each year, our outdated combined sewer discharges more than 5 billion gallons of raw sewage to area waterways, and this is a problem we must correct by the year 2025 under a federal mandate by US EPA. But there's good news. It's that Indianapolis is leading the way in implementing innovative solutions to updating its aging water and wastewater infrastructure. And so over the past 5 years, Citizens has invested more than $230 million in our water system to reduce water main breaks, improve our system flow, and enhance our treatment plants. Over the next 2 years, we'll make another $100 million of investments in our water system to ensure water safety, reliability, and to make sure that we have long-term water supply to meet our needs. We're planning the development of the first new reservoir in central Indiana in more than 60 years. We plan to convert an 88-acre, 230-foot deep quarry in Hamilton County into Citizens Reservoir. When complete in 4 years, the new reservoir will provide about 3.2 billion gallons of storage capacity, or about half the capacity of our adjacent Geist Reservoir. This innovative solution will cost about $25 million, but that's compared to the traditional building of a reservoir that would cost somewhere around $500 million. Since 2011, we've invested more than $774 million in our wastewater system to reduce sewer overflows and double the capacity of our two advanced wastewater treatment plants. And over the next 9 years, we will complete the Dig Indy project, a 28-mile tunnel of a network of underground tunnels 250 feet beneath Marion County. It's designed that to capture sewer overflows, store it, and for treatment at a later date. At the same time, our septic tank elimination program is expanding our sewer system to neighborhoods throughout Marion County that must depend on failing septic tanks, which are adding further pollution to area waterways. By the year 2025, we will have invested more than $3 billion in the community's wastewater system to virtually eliminate overflows to area waterways. We're also implementing sustainable solutions to reducing overflows. Last year, our CSO 33 project installed rain gardens to reduce sewer overflows in a neighborhood, Hallville, and beautifying that neighborhood. This project was recognized with the Mayor's Sustainability Award, and today I'm excited to announce that later this week, we've partnered with some community partners to plant thousands of trees across the city to further reduce sewer overflows, improve air quality, and enhance neighborhoods, and also ultimately reduce our operating costs. Now, as we make these unprecedented investments, we're also focused more than ever on holding down our utility costs. We're reexamining all of our business processes at Citizens with a focus on enhancing customer service and improving efficiency. Our Voice of the Customer initiative is providing new self-service and communications options through our redesigned website. So if you haven't been to our website lately, we've got some new things in store for you. By providing more convenient options like online chat with customer service representatives, we're making it easier for our customers to do business with us while holding down, again, our operating costs. This is especially important as we're now seeing a trend where we see more online traffic than we see foot traffic in our customer service center. At the same time, we're using a process called value engineering to drive innovation and reduce cost of our capital investments. Through value engineering, we're challenging our diverse employee team to question past assumptions and think about how to plan and execute our projects. This past April, we announced a revised completion plan for the Dig Indy project that will provide an additional $70 million in savings while raising the overflow capture rate from 95% capture rate to a 99% capture rate. The new tunnel completion plan brings total savings on the Dig Indy project to more than $400 million compared to the original estimate. Our employees are focused more than ever on controlling costs because they know the impact our system investments have on utility rates and ultimately household and business budgets. Unfortunately, poverty continues to grow in Marion County. In the year 2000, census data tells us that there were about 91,000 people, or 11% of the population, living below the federal poverty level. Today, more than 21% of the population of Marion County, or more than 200,000 people, are living below the federal poverty level. To put that number into perspective, if poverty in Marion County were a city, it would be the third largest city in the state of Indiana. The impact of these rising utility costs hit home last year when one of our customers attended one of our board meetings. His name was Robert. And Robert explained the impact of our utility bills on his $650 a month income. $650 a month. It's people like Robert who motivate our employees every day to find innovative ways to make sure we hold our costs down. Now, as we work to keep rates as low as possible, we are utilizing our non-utility revenue to also help support a wide range of nonprofit organizations that are geared towards making Indianapolis a better place to live. As we support these various nonprofit endeavors, our employees are positively impacting their communities in many ways, including coming together each year for our Sharing of the Dream event, which honors the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. Over the past 8 years, our Sharing the Dream event has resulted in more than $1 million of improvements to Indy parks and facilities. These improvements have led to noticeable increases in the park's use, and they've also increased revenues generated by these community assets. At Citizens Energy Group, creating value through innovation started in 1887, when community leaders had a big idea to place the fledgling gas utility into a trust. Over the past 129 years, our trust structure has allowed us to maintain the service-focused mission of the public sector while retaining the entrepreneurial spirit of the private sector. Without the short-term pressures of partisan politics or the need to pay shareholders, decisions at Citizens Energy Group have always focused on the long-term value of our customers and on our economy. The smart solutions we're creating to update our utility infrastructure are having lasting impacts on Central Indiana. Our investments will ensure Central Indiana has the energy and water it needs to grow, and there will be significant growth. Our investments will restore water quality in area rivers to streams and levels not seen in more than 100 years. Cleaning up our rivers and streams will help revitalize neighborhoods across the city. Our investments are also supporting significant job creation. A recent study commissioned by Citizens Energy Group estimates that our $4 billion of gas, water, and wastewater investments between the years 2011 and 2025 will create or support more than 58,000 good-paying jobs. That will also generate more than $450 million in state and local taxes here in Indiana. As I reflect on the past 5 years since our acquisition of the community's water and wastewater utilities, I could not be more optimistic about the future of Citizens Energy Group and the service to this great community. Thanks to our unique structure and deeply committed employees, I firmly believe that Citizens is achieving our vision to serve our customers and our communities with unparalleled excellence and integrity. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. That
You're
was
welcome.
Terrific.
You're welcome.
Let me open with a question. You may or may not like this question, but sometimes when people think about what you do and the infrastructure you oversee, they think about it particularly when stuff doesn't work very well and when there are big national stories about things not working well. And probably the biggest national story we've had of things not working well, at least in the water field, that I can think of recently has been Flint, Michigan. And I suspect you've gotten some questions about could that ever happen here, why or why not, and at the risk of testing you too much with your patience on that, I think I would like to ask you that, because what is it, obviously, that came about in part because of some economic choices made by policymakers at higher levels of government in the state and regional government in Michigan. But also, it seemed to come as a surprise to people when they discovered what the issues were. How do Citizens keep something like Flint from happening here? And if you could also reflect a little bit in that, Jeff, in how you work with state and local officials to avoid having something like that happen here.
Great. No, absolutely. I'll start with an answer this way. We do a lot to help prevent something like Flint, Michigan from occurring here. And I'll provide a little bit of background because I think it's important if you don't already know what happened in Flint. But at Citizens here, again, the issue was led in Flint, and there are rules that test for both lead and copper, and utilities like ours are required to do periodic testing for lead and copper, and so that's one thing that happens. We don't have any lead in our system, in our distribution system. Lead is not introduced at all in terms of the water treatment process. When the water leaves the treatment plant, it's lead-free. It gets into our distribution system, it's lead-free. The problem occurs when it runs into a service line in some of our older homes. And Indianapolis has some of these older homes. There are about 50,000 homes that were built on or before 1950. And those are the homes that could have some problems, and I'll explain why I say could here in just a moment. But the homes built again 1950 or before could have some problems, and that's what happened in Flint. So we don't have that problem here. We treat our water properly. We test our water periodically. And so let's go back and understand a little bit then about what happened in Flint. As David said, there was an economic decision to switch from Lake Huron to the Flint River. Okay, and so I heard a reporter last week indicate that the new source water, the Flint River water, was tainted. That's not exactly a true statement. But what happened was the new source water, the water from the Flint River, actually had different characteristics. It had different properties in the water. It was more corrosive. It was a more corrosive water, fine to drink, but more corrosive water. When that corrosive water made it to some of these older homes built, in the 1950s or so, that corrosion started eroding then and scouring the inside of lead pipes. So homes built before the 1950s used lead and copper in their pipes, and so that's where the problem was introduced. This new source water came in. The old source water was treated in such a way that it provided a coating and a film on the inside of the pipes. This new source water came in, and testing should have indicated this, allowed the scouring to take place, and that's then where the lead was dropped into the water, and these then families ingested lead-based water. So citizens, again, we do a number of things. We test these homes that were built in that area periodically. We actually provide sample kits to the homeowner. We give them instructions on how to test their water. We take that information back, and then we are obligated to provide that testing data to the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. And so we are locked at the hip with them when it comes to public safety. Obviously, public safety is paramount here when it comes to something so critical as our drinking water. We will not hesitate. So just giving you a heads up, if there's any problem whatsoever, there will be no hesitation. We would issue a notice. Now we don't expect that at all, but this is a very serious business, and so we have to be that way when it comes to the public drinking water. When it comes to working with our state and local governments, we have a very good working relationship, both with the mayor's office. I'm not sure if he's still here, Mr. Mayor. There he is. Joe, how you doing? Yeah. With the mayor's office, with IDEM, appreciate Carol being here. And then with the governor's office as well, we're in constant contact again with each of those entities.
Jeff, you had some. We could be here the rest of the day with a number of questions coming in. So we will keep an eye on the time. But you have some interesting questions coming. You said some really interesting things and struck a very compelling image on the challenges of poverty in this community. How does the growth of poverty, or just the existence of poverty at that scale in a community like this, affect citizens' ability to invest in the future, as you've done so well in the past and the present?
You know, it's something that I'll tell you is it's on the mind of my board of trustees, it's on the mind of my board of directors, it's on the minds of our management team. We essentially title that and talk about affordability. We talk about the ability of our ratepayers, of our customers, to afford these services. And so, you know, I talked a lot about cost reduction because, again, you know, Robert's story coming in to us last year at a board meeting and talking to us, you know, that's very compelling. And so we're very focused on cost control, affordability, yet we need to provide high quality, reliability, and value as well. And so we are constantly looking for ways to reduce those costs. And as I stated earlier, the $70 million in savings was one of those. That was huge. And our last water rate increase, it's not a very well-known fact, but we actually went in and we reduced our capital spending by about $7 million a year. We reduced it voluntarily. Now, again, we believe that we can do that while maintaining the safety, maintaining system reliability and the integrity of our system, but we are challenging ourselves to make sure that we're balancing the costs of our business with the affordability of customers like Robert, and again, for your businesses. Many businesses here today are competing regionally, nationally, internationally, and so we have that in our minds as well as we go about conducting our business every day.
Terrific. That's very helpful. What is Citizens doing as it relates to smart gas and water meters and other cybersecurity protection of the gas and water infrastructure? There's a question you couldn't have gotten 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's we're doing a lot. We're constantly looking at the smart meters. We are evaluating that. We believe currently that our program of having our meter readers is really the low cost, and it's high in terms of our reliability on that process. Cybersecurity is a new world. There's a lot going on in cybersecurity, and a lot going on in the utility, as you might imagine, in the utility industry. We've actually had, to date, two state-initiated cyber exercises that have taken place at two military bases here in Indiana, and so the plan, you know, we're contingency planning, and we're understanding first of all how to even recognize some type of a cyber attack, and then obviously how to deal with that. So we've got a lot of communication taking place between the Department of Homeland Security, mm-hmm. Citizens, and other utilities around the state. because of the criticality of the infrastructure. For us, water, natural gas are huge. Some might throw wastewater in there as well. But again, those are areas that could be prone to attack if someone wanted to.
And is there connectivity with other utilities around the country on those?
We do connect with the interstate natural gas pipelines, and even some on the water systems as well. Especially with the water aquifers, some of us pull from the same water aquifer. So if that were tainted, it could affect multiple utilities simultaneously.
Right. Here's one and I'd be interested in your comments on this, both as a community leader and also as the head of Citizens mm-hmm. Energy. What can Citizens Energy do in coming years to transform the White River such that it can be a place for recreation and riverfront development?
You know, and again, that Deep Rock Tunnel project that we talked about will transform the White River. And we'll start that as soon as possible. We currently have, again, this project is 250 feet beneath the surface. It'll ultimately be 28 miles long at that depth. It'll have a finished diameter of 18 feet, so really large, with 12-foot thick concrete, 12 inches thick. You can tell the engineer's getting a little excited. 12 inches thick concrete liner. And it will store, again, raw sewage that is now leaching into our area rivers and streams. We'll capture all of that. And again, this it's called sewer overflow, where sewer overflows into our rivers and streams. That happens when it rains outside. As little as a quarter of an inch causes these overflows to take place. And so, again, while this project won't be done until 2025, our goal is to bring this thing in phases. So with the first segment, which is between about 9 and 10 miles, we'll bulkhead that, and then we'll bring that section online. So we'll begin to see improvements. Hopefully, again, if our planning goes right and the project stays on schedule, we'll see that project come online, that first segment, that first 9 to 10-mile segment, in the fall of 2017.
What would the impact be if natural gas prices spike again, and how likely do you think that is?
I'll answer the second part of that question first. I don't think that's very likely. Every projection that we have seen, the American Gas Association, we've seen others with independent analyses and forecasts on natural gas prices and quantity, show that we have got an abundant supply of natural gas for at least the next 80 years. And because of that, we're seeing that prices, while they may tick up a bit, we'll see some volatility. It won't be the $10 to $15 that we saw some 5 to 10 years ago. So our expectation is that natural gas prices will stay low, and that the quantity will be there for quite some foreseeable time. There have even been some analyses and forecasts that show us, actually, because we're the largest producer in the world now in natural gas, actually exporting natural gas to other countries. And even in some of those scenarios, the shale gas formations are so rich with natural gas that we still see both the volume and the mm-hmm. price staying fairly stable.
Terrific. So interesting developments that we all deal with a lot, and really CICP's strategy is based around this too, is the increasing rise of metropolitan areas as being mm-hmm. the real center of economic growth and mm-hmm. activity going forward, even more than states. Mm-hmm. It's really going to be the key metro areas. And as that happens, we are seeing clearly increasing density, particularly in this area and mm-hmm. surrounding areas. Mm-hmm. You have an interesting perspective on that because you're looking at a lot of things under the ground. You're looking at a lot of the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. From your vantage point, are there limits on how much we can grow here, or in ways that we can grow here from either a density or an absolute number of people standpoint?
You know, there are some rules and laws around growth from a utility standpoint. We have to have enough capacity. We've got to grow enough to meet that demand. But interestingly enough, there's a group that one of our leaders is involved in on the water side, called the Central Indiana Drinking Water Collaborative, and we're looking at that now. And so this group and has some neat maps, and maybe sometime someone could come back and share this information. But they're showing the population growth along the 65 corridor, the 69 corridor, And then what the utilities are doing on the water side, we're looking to understand what that means very specifically to your question, to our infrastructure. What's that mean in terms of build out? What's that mean in terms of water supply? Are we on the right path, or did growth take off fast enough that now we're off of our normal track and we need to do something different? So we're starting to prepare for that growth. While I think there could be some limitations, I think our pre-planning, we're in pre-planning stages right now, I think, and our goal is not to inhibit that growth, so we should be ready.
Do you think there needs to be forward investment to protect that or to allow that to happen, you know, or is that, it more just keeping up with or keeping
track of it? It's interesting, you know, for utilities, the assets that we build, it's very tough to build something in the future and hold it there. It has to be used and useful in order to be able to be charged again. So I'd say again, you know, kind of on the job or on time infrastructure planning is what will be needed more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the water initiative, and we've obviously heard some about that too, even at the statewide basis, and there are a number of policymakers who are concerned that in the future water is going to be such a scarce resource that if we're not doing a lot of planning now, both in its quality and its quantity, our future will not be bright. Do you see that as a particular issue for us to be worried about in terms of the adequacy of supplies of clean drinking water here?
You know, I'd say no. We actually, again, after taking over the assets about 5 years ago now, we started the planning process on water supply very early. Recall 2011, we acquired the assets. 2012, there was a drought. It was the worst scenario ever. So that really kickstarted us in looking at adequate water supply. And then we began to utilize, again, some industry standards. The electrics do it. They look at generation supply planning. They're looking at load growth in cities and plan for generation. We're using some of those same planning techniques on the water side. One of our VPs is spearheading that effort. And so we now are looking out 100 years in terms of long-term water supply. So, and as we do that, we're looking again at the most economic way to bring these options on to supply water to the community. So we literally rank order these options on a dollar per million gallons basis. And the lowest, most least cost option is the option that we pursue first until we feel we have enough in terms of the quantity that we need to supply to our communities.
Mm-hmm. So here's one that we'll be dealing with actually in a program later in the year, but it's an emphatically asked question. What do you think about 16 Tech, and how are you involved in it? I did not plant that question.
I think 16 Tech is amazing. I think it's a game changer for the city of Indianapolis. And full disclosure, I am on the 16 Tech board. But again, I think it's going to be meaningful. You know, when I look at 16 Tech, I think about the millennials and I think about innovation. I think about a great place that's vibrant, that's energetic, that's not only contributing to our community here locally, but contributing to the communities across the United States. So very excited about the prospect of 16 Tech and look forward to working on it.
That's great. What do you see, or where do you see, actually, solar and wind energy fitting in here as part of the overall energy menu?
You know, I see them fitting in. They're in fact, already here. We actually have a solar. There was a vendor that came in at our LNG North facility and wanted to site solar panels on our land, and so we've allowed that to happen. So those technologies are already here, and I think again, you know, with sustainability and again the community caring more about the environment, we'll see that groundswell start to demand more of those types of energy sources in the future.
Jeff, we're almost at our limit here. You just one, we could go on for an hour, but this will be a fun question. Jeff, what is it like 250 feet below the city? And how cool is that?
You know what? It's very, very cool. Especially for the engineer, gets a little excited again. It's very cool. That it's a really neat project. I'll share one story and I'll be done. When you're going down to 250 feet in Indiana, once you go to 100 feet, there stops being dirt. There's no more dirt. It becomes rock. So to go further, you've got to drill and blast. You've got to blow this rock up, and then they literally pick up this is a huge hole. It's some 45 feet in diameter. Pick up a front end loader, stick it down in the hole, scoop up the rock, pull the front end loader out, and then you drill and blast again. Well, one of the things I got to do is I got to detonate one of these blasts. And so I was so focused. You know, you don't have the plunger any longer. They've got this device, two metal discs. There's a blasting cap in between. And I'm not kidding you. This is a throwback to Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. To those of you who are into that, there is a job title called the Master Blaster. True story. The Master Blaster and I are talking, and I'm focused on this disc, and he says, you yell fire in the hole. And I thought he was kidding with me. And I said, really, you still yell fire in the hole? He says, yeah, you yell fire in the hole. So fire in the hole, and I stepped on this thing, and the ignition of these microcharges that were set milliseconds apart. I know, this is fascinating stuff for me. But it was an absolute joy. So I had a lot of fun. And then going down in the tunnel, the mayor's been down with me as well. It's just a really neat experience. I wish I could take you all down in there. It's a once in a lifetime neat experience. A bit scary if you're afraid of heights like me. But it's a really neat experience. And then obviously the workforce is neat to chat with. But absolutely amazing 250 feet beneath the surface. It's like spelunking. So if the lights go out, you're not going to be able to see your hand in front of your face, but a very, very neat experience.
I think you're going to get a lot of applicants for that Master Blaster position. Jeff, thank you. Please join me in welcoming
you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You
see what I mean about span of control. I mean, that was quite a range of questions.
Thank you very much.
Today's presentation will be broadcast on WFYI Public Radio 90.1 FM on Saturday, November 12th. It's also available for download at WFYI.org. Please join us next month, November 29th, as Jay Powell, who's a member of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, joins us. He's going to talk about the U.S. economy, unemployment, inflation, financial regulation, and I suspect the results of what happens 2 weeks from today. So please be sure to purchase your tickets. Should be a mighty interesting discussion and time to have it. Information and tickets for each of the season's presenters can be found at economicclubofindiana.com. Thank you all for coming. See you next month.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, David.
Thank you, Jeff. That was awesome.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a speech from Jeffrey Harrison, part of the 2016-2017 Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series. Join us next month for a speech from Jerome J. Powell of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. You can find more information online at economicclubofindiana.com. The Economic Club of Indiana is a production of WFYI Public Media in Indianapolis for Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations. Thank you for joining us.